Welcome back to Driving Progress with Audi and me, Sonia Lennon. Join me throughout the series as I speak to a number of Audi brand ambassadors and special guests about living their passions, personal beliefs, the importance of progress, and their attitudes towards the future. We welcome you to experience progress with Audi. Today's guest is Audi Galway brand ambassador Shane Walsh, one of Ireland's biggest Gaelic football stars, having played in the All-Ireland Senior Final and also the All-Ireland Club Senior Final. It's been an unbelievably busy year for you, Shane. You are so welcome to join us today.
Thank you very much, Sonia, for having me.
So I'm not going to pretend to be a sports journalist here. What I want to know today is about, I suppose, what drives you. And, you know, looking at the way that you are perceived by the huge GAA fan base and looking at the way you play, I'm struck by a couple of things. A sense of curiosity, lightness, and almost kind of cheekiness in that you're playing with the game as well as playing it.
Probably an interesting way of looking at it, but it's probably like everything for me, I suppose, is kind of always revolves around enjoyment. Like for me, you know, especially with football, like it's something I've enjoyed since I started, and that's probably one feature I always probably try and show as I play in games and trainings. Like, and I'd always probably take things kind of lighthearted, but like there's always, I suppose, a sense of deep thinking going on in the background, because obviously there's a lot of work that goes into, you know, putting out a performance and that. So like for me, a lot of the stuff I do is probably away from the training ground, is probably away from what everyone else sees, because I always say, like, what you do in training is what you practice at home, and what you do in the game is what you practice in training. So like they all kind of fall into each other. So like I don't essentially go to training to learn what I do. You're trying to learn the different tactics, the stuff managers go through. But like for me, the skill base, like that's all developed, I suppose, from when I was younger, obviously having teachers and different coaches help me out along. But again, I went home, and a lot of it, I probably would put it down to his imagination as well.
That's really interesting that you say that word, because there's something in the way that you play that is very creative, you know? And I go back to that early story of, was it your principal who got you to play with the non-dominant foot? Tell us about that.
Yeah, so I suppose, like, I was, as mum and dad would tell you, I was born with probably a football in my hands in some shape or form. But I went into Clonburn National School, and our principal, like, used to give up his lunch breaks going out watching he'd referee the sixth class, fifth class games. But I was obviously only in senior infants at the time, and he came across watching one of the games I was playing, and he saw me kicking off my right foot a lot and scoring and training. So he kind of put a challenge to me, saying that, look, you have to go home and practice your left foot, and when you do come back in a couple of weeks, I'm going to stop you kicking with your right foot, which would have been my dominant foot at the time. So like that for me was a challenge straight away, and it was something I embraced. Like I went home, and like I would have started off the very basics, trying to kick a ball, you're throwing it up and kicking it. But you know, after a while, between watching obviously the likes of Port Joyce, Derek Savage, Jeff Allen, these players I would looked up to playing for Galway, I was able to start to replicate. And again, I go back to the word imagination. Like I would be outside and I'm literally visualising them in my head, saying this is how they kicked it, this is the style they used, and I'm then trying to recreate that. And like over repetition, it was like, as I said, the quote goes, the death by a thousand cuts. That's what it was, and I just kept working away at it. And it's stood to me now, because...
Well, can we just take a moment to just go back a little bit and say senior infants. So you were six when your career started, effectively.
Yeah, well, probably baby infants, but senior infants definitely when he spotted me. we'll say senior infants.
We'll give you baby infants. How about that? Just for consistency. That's kind of amazing, you know? And I wonder, listening to your story and listening to you, I get the sense that, yes, it's football, but it kind of could have been anything.
Yeah, probably, like, in some ways, in shape or form, it probably could have been anything. I suppose where I was probably brought up, it's GAA Central, so it's literally football was all we kind of played there. And so that's probably the path I followed. Like, but, do you know, even like when I think of my own kind of traits as a person, it's probably like patience and persistence are probably my two biggest traits that I like. If something doesn't happen now, you keep working at it and you'll get there. And that's probably the way that I saw that. Even the challenges that I was put in front of me from my principal at the time was, you know, to go home and practice your non-dominant foot. For me, that was a challenge, and I had to be patient with it, because it wasn't as if I just picked up the ball and started doing this automatically. I had to work at it. I had to use my imagination, you know, and like that all helped, and it allowed me to evolve in as a player as well.
And I think that is, it's so inspiring, because, you know, there is, you know, natural talent that you're gifted with, but that can only take you so far unless you put the hard yards in, unless you, you know, show up, be consistent, be tenacious.
That's it. Yeah, exactly. And even like, Joe, there's always, and I always say I probably would probably deal with a lot of pressure between like in games, training, everything. Like players look up to you, and there's obviously the challenges management put in front of you. But it's probably something I probably learned again at a young age, that even when my first time, I always remember it was an under 14 game. I was only about 11 at the time. I was taking a free off the ground, and my manager at the time, like, they hadn't seen me practicing at home. No one sees me practicing, but I decided on this game that I was going to do this, and they were nearly losing their life at me, looking at me doing it. But I backed myself, because I'd put the work in. I knew what I was going to do, and it was just about showcasing it then to everybody else. And like, it's funny when that goes over the bar, it's like, oh, went over the bar, and it's like, wow, it's great. But like, at the same time, I'm sure they're going to kick up the backside if it went the other way. But like, they're the kind of things.
And so were you always kind of playing up throughout your whole sort of training and career and development? You were always probably the youngest person on the pitch.
I started off obviously when I was Galway, like I was the youngest player in the dressing room when I started. Obviously I'm a long way from that now, but you would have been, yeah, because like, I suppose obviously I wouldn't have been from a small parish as well, but yeah, I would have always kind of been playing up the grades. Like, I remember playing under 10s, like it was the lowest age group at the time, and I was only just after turning, I think it was nearly 6, I wasn't even 6 at the time. It stood to me because I used my skill rather than use my strength.
And what did you learn from that, I suppose? Because, you know, not to jump forward too quickly, but this podcast, you know, everything that we do is about progress. It's about, you know, how you get from A to B. And every challenge that we face, and whether it's being the youngest person in the changing room or whatever it might be, you have to take learnings. So what's your process for that? How do you kind of disseminate what actually happened and take it into applicable learnings?
Yeah, I think the big thing for me is dealing with adversity, like, because, you know, everyone goes out like to, you know, with a plan in place to do whatever they're going to do, and something can come up. And I always say, like, even with opposition teams, like they're come up with a plan to stop that. So you have to deal with that adversity. And like, for me, that's something that I've always tried to apply to myself, that like, it's not that you're forward thinking, what if they do this, if they do that. It's just the reacting to it. And for me, like, because of all the work that you put in outside of that, that you're basically ready. If they do this, I'm going to do something different. And if they do something different again, I'm going to change that again. And it's always about being able to adapt. And like, the more tools I always say that I have, it adds to my bow, I suppose, and that I'm able to showcase what I'm able to do. And you know, that's my kind of way of, I suppose, seeing progression, that when a challenge is put in front of you, you're not actually there sitting looking at it and saying, I'm not able to do it. You're saying, I'm going to find a way.
And I think, you know, I mentioned the word creativity. You didn't put it in your kind of defining characteristics at the beginning. I think you said patience and
persistence, yeah.
Right? So, you know, what is your perception of your creativity? Because I look at what you're saying about the play and the level of skill that you're laying down so that the foundations are there allows you then almost to go off-piste and to do the unexpected, to blindside people with what they didn't see coming. That is a creative process, no?
Yeah, no, it definitely is. Like, I always, like, probably magic is always the word I use. And it's funny, I always remember the basketball player Magic Johnson when I was younger, and it's just a word that always stuck with me, was like, can you perform magic on the field, and how you're going to do that? And like, that's, I suppose, again, like we always say, everyone trains the same. So like, if you train everyone the same, they do the same, they're going to be the same. I know it sounds weird when you say it like that, but that's
we all work, right?
Yeah, that's,
unless we challenge it.
Well, exactly. But also, it's, as I said earlier, I was on about like what I do away from the training ground. So I was like, yes, we can do all this. So obviously, like with when you're playing a team sport, or you're in a, you know, even in a business or anything like that, you're in a team environment. So for me, I'm saying, yes, everyone's doing the same thing, but what can I bring extra to the table?
So what is the extra you bring? What's the homework?
I think it's my skill set. Like, I think it's like that for me is probably the big thing that I back myself, because I've put in the work away from the training ground. Because, like, everyone, as I said, if you keep doing the same thing, you're going to expect the same stuff. Whereas if somebody doesn't see what I'm going to do, they don't know what's going to happen. And for me, that's creating different scenarios at home. When I was out practicing kicking the ball, like, you'd still do it. I'm still a child, really, when I go out kicking the ball in my head, because I'm still thinking of things. I'm still putting myself in front of 80,000 people in Croke Park kicking the ball.
And is that a visualisation process for you?
Oh, 100%. Like, as in, it's probably visualisation. I probably downplay it a lot when I'm talking, because I suppose it just happens so naturally with me. Even when I'm not trying to, I'm nearly doing it. Do you know, and I'm always creating moments in my head that, and like, lo and behold, it's like, they come to fruition then. Like, I always said there a couple of years ago in a Connacht final in 2018 against Roscommon, the Thursday before, and I just went kicking balls by myself. And the three positions I kicked from on that evening, on a wet, windy evening in Pier Stadium, it went down to Hyde Park 3 days later, and my points from playing the game were the exact same places I kicked from that Thursday.
That's so, like, extraordinary.
Yeah, it's one of those things that, again, but when I got the ball in that area, I knew that, Joe, I had the process done already. So it was just a matter of showcasing what
I'd
done. Yeah.
And how much then, I mean, I have a sense of it now listening to you, but the visualization is one thing. The mindset and the self-belief is almost layered on top of that, I think, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. I always say, if you don't believe it yourself, like, how are you going to do it? Like, I'm not one to look around for inspiration. Like, if you get inspiration, like, my probably biggest inspiration is my parents at home, my family, to inspire me to do what I do. But it's, you know, and
okay,
like,
so now I'm a little bit in love with you. That's just too nice.
But I think it always comes from home. Like, for me anyways, like, when I'm playing, like, you're saying, like, I would have always been bugging my dad when I was younger to come and watch my games from when I was 6 or 7 years of age, always begging him to come and watch the games, and he'd be taking time off his day working to come and watch me play, and now you couldn't get him away from a game. Like, so it's great in that sense, but, like, for me, that's the driving factor. That's my inspiration to go and do what I do, and to, when I go out training or I go out practicing, they're the kind of things I look back to inspire me to go. And, like, even now at the moment, I have four nieces and nephew there, and, like, you know, Milo at home there is kicking ball left, right and centre.
That's nearly a team.
Yeah, but that's... Yeah. Which it's lovely that you have that at home, that, again, that inspiration, like, because that's what inspires me to go out, keep doing what I'm doing, and grows my, I suppose, my self-belief and my, you know, that what I've been doing, you keep doing, you keep working at it, and, you know, until the day I finish playing, that's the way I'll be.
So how does that land then when you look at the absolute brouhaha of changing teams, when everything is grounded in, you know, your sense of identity and family and place, and you make that decision to change teams, which was obviously very strategic on your part and very considered. How do you make that call? What are the factors that say this is the right thing to do?
Like, I suppose, again, it starts, I suppose, with the number one, I suppose, in the sense of where I'm at in my life. And obviously I was going through a bit of change in relation to, you know, moving up to Dublin, going back to doing the college degree, teaching in Dublin, doing a bit of work as well with Ericus on the side. And, you know, there's all that side of things that you're literally working away at. And then it comes down to then, how does your body respond to all of this? And, like, the stresses, as I said, there's all pressures, and I'm used to dealing with that pressure. It's just, can your body go with what my mindset is? And, you know, for me, I was saying, like, it was probably the right decision for me at the time in my life to do this. So I then turned next door then to my family and said, well, what do you think of this? Because that's the next step for me, was going, knocking on mum and dad's door and saying, well, like, I know this is going to impact you at home. So I was like, what's your version of this? And, you know, there was a lot of conversations around that. I obviously met with the club on a couple of occasions before I even made the decision in relation to what I was going to do. But ultimately, it was the right decision, and thankfully, my family backed it. And
eventually,
well, they, in fairness, they were always supportive of me. Like, they want the best for me. Like, I'll always say that my brothers and sisters, they'd be always in support to me. And, you know, once that was the decision made, they were happy to back me 100% of the way. And, you know, and that they did. Like, they've been at every game that I've been up here at. But it is, like, it's a hard one, because you're essentially leaving one family in a way, in a broader sense, and moving to another one. But I've been very lucky to the club I've gone to, because the people in that club are special people as well. They've been very good to me since I've joined the club. They've been very good to my family. And, you know, the players, it's like one big family there as well. And for me, it was just, I'm an outgoing, sociable, kind of optimistic person. So I always find I'm able to kind of go into those environments and hold my own, in the sense that I'm able to go and open the conversations, open the doors and say, well, look, I'm going to give everything here to this cause, and take me on board. And thankfully they did.
And how did you make that selection? Was it about kind of culture and values, and, you know, what made that right for you?
Oh, yeah, I suppose you've literally hit the, I suppose it's the way the group hold themselves. And, you know, obviously I met with the captain, Shane Cunningham, and a few more lads, Paul Mannion as well. Like, and, you know, it's just the way, I suppose, their aspirations as well was, they're aspiring to big things as well. And it's just the way the club is itself in general, like how they look after the youth, like the way they're always promoting like all the underage setups that are there, and, you know, going supporting them, going supporting the ladies teams, you know, it's all that kind of ethos there. And like when you create a family environment, like it sounds like an easy thing. Sometimes you're just born into, so you're a product of your own environment. But at the same time, when you're bringing different lads from different homes together, be it in the one area or be it in the broader area, you still have to try and get that, you know, that balance right. And not every club can get that, not every county can get that, but like they have got that, and you could feel that as soon as you went into the dressing room and to meet the lads.
I think you can feel it because it lives in every word and action. You know, it's not something that you can put on the wall and say, this is how we are. It has to be lived.
Oh, yeah, 100%. It's like they are what they preach. Like that's the biggest thing I could say about them, that everything they say, they follow it up, like, and like your actions speak louder than words.
So despite the fact that your new club welcomed you with open arms, you had the support of your family, I'm sure there must have been tough times and a lot of challenges in dealing with the external response to that decision. How did you manage that?
Yeah, it's like that was probably, look, that's probably one of the toughest periods from my perspective that I've experienced in life, you know, because obviously you're going away from people you know at home, and obviously there's a broader audience there that we're keenly watching as well, that I learned. But it's probably something I hadn't experienced either in my life, in sense of when I started off playing with Galway at a young age, and people have always been kind of complimenting my style of football, and, you know, that was very much the way I was perceived. And then obviously this came and it obviously divided people's opinions, and it's funny, I probably didn't know how to kind of sum up what exactly, how I was going to kind of react to the whole thing, or how, what I was going to do about the whole thing, because obviously I knew if I met somebody, it was the first thing someone was going to say to me. I remember coming back off a flight in Spain the week after I kind of announced I was transferring, because I said that week is going to be mental, so I was going to get away from there. But like, you're kind of land back in, it's a baptism of fire really. But my girlfriend said to me, like, Rachel, she was like, you know, those who mind won't matter, and those who matter don't mind. So like, that's the only way I suppose I could help to kind of break down that whole scenario, because obviously they're hurting people at home by leaving. They don't want to see you going, but at the same time, as I said, like when I'm getting injured or things like that are happening, like it's me that suffers then, and nobody else is kind of wondering how Shane, they're more so saying, oh, he's just injured, he's not there, like. But, you know, so essentially that's the way I kind of saw breaking that kind of that sequence, was kind of saying, well, like if I was injured, I wouldn't be there. So like that's kind of the way I kind of tried to play it down a bit.
And you seem to really be very connected and understand both your physical body and your psyche. There's a great sense from you that you really respect knowing and understanding what's right for you. And it doesn't come across in any sort of kind of arrogant way or anything like that. It's actually quite beautiful that you're like, this is my body, this is my brain, this is what we have to do to protect it. Which is kind of the ultimate wisdom, that you know what's next for you. And I suppose you took that knowledge and where you're at in your life to make the decision to study.
Yeah, exactly. And like I suppose probably comes with age as well, obviously, like you kind of obtain things. And I'd be very much a case of like, Joe, you're always picking things up. As I always remember someone saying, like, there's little nuggets in life that you can keep picking up the whole time, never mind, you know, what age you are, you can still pick them up no matter what. So for me, that's what I'm trying to, Joe, you're picking and choosing, I suppose, what's best suited to me and, you know, my personality and my what I want from life as well. So like, that's probably the big thing for me. I just kept on looking at different avenues and seeing what was the best scenario for me. And, you know, again, like you said, listening to my body, listening to my mind, and my persistence in to follow it. And that's what led me then to, you know, I do feel like I'm quite good with people, like, and I have that kind of like understanding of people and kind of realizing kind of, I suppose, feelings, emotions, and, you know, just being able to hold a conversation to be in the sense of what's best for this person now, like what do I feel is best, and without trying to tell them I know everything, like you're just trying to give that little piece of advice. And, you know, that for me kind of resonated with coming, looking at teaching. Then, like, for me, I would have talked to France through Anne. She was in the GPA. She was very good to me at a time where I was kind of unsure what I was going to do in life, to be honest, because I had been in the bank for a couple of years and I just felt that wasn't for me. So it was a case of what is for me. And, you know, the more conversations I had with her, the more I found this kind of avenue to see that, you know, I can work with people to give them those little pieces of advice. And that's the way I see teaching with the kids. I'm kind of looking at them and saying, like, when they're doing in P class there, when they're doing an activity like that, I'm able to kind of look at them and kind of create a connection and a bond with them, that they're then seeing, you know, something they might struggle with, that I could give them a little tip in relation to what I think could work for them. And when you see that happening, I think it's the biggest reward for me in a job. And, like, I probably hadn't felt that reward ever before. So it's nice. Like, and obviously, as I said, it came with big change, but it's been an enjoyable change.
So my sister is an art teacher in secondary school, and I've been privy to a lot of the really amazing stories that she has told me about individual kids. And I can see you being a brilliant teacher, an absolutely brilliant teacher. Is there any kid story, is there any kind of, and I know you're kind of starting out on your journey, is there something that stands out that you felt, I actually made a difference there?
I suppose, well, like, obviously, like, there's always little bits in class, and, like, you know, for me, I suppose it's about kind of catering for everyone, like, and even, like, you know, from when I was in school, probably wasn't, you weren't, I suppose, too aware of people, you know, maybe kids in your own class that might have had disadvantages, be it, like, with autism or something of that. And, you know, like, that's when you become aware in a teaching spectrum that you're literally seeing this in the classroom environment and seeing, like, there's no point trying to put something out there that you think will fit everyone. Like, it's not a one size fits all in a classroom basis. Like, so for me, I want to see kids enjoying it. And, like, I remember just, like, off the top of my head, I remember doing the gymnastics class there, one of the girls, and, like, she had autism and she was struggling with one of the routines that we were doing. And, you know, it was just a case of the one they were trying to do was a bit complicated. So it was just about breaking it down, bringing it into a simpler one for her to do, and, like, to see the enjoyment in her face, being able to do it and coming over to me saying, oh, look, Mr. Hodge, I'm able to do this one. And, you know, it's those little wins. That's the way I see it. Like, it makes you feel like I've made the difference. I've made that child happy that she was able to execute that in class and she's enjoying her PE class. And, you know, that was something then she could go home and tell her parents about. So,
and that is it. It's confidence. It's these little moments of confidence that are bestowed on people that create catalysts for change throughout all those lives that you encounter, you know. When you look back, who were those catalysts for you? You've spoken about your family, obviously, yeah, but there have to have been others.
Yeah, I suppose, like, looking back over my career now to date, like, obviously my principal in National School, Pather, was a huge influence on me and still is to this day. He'd still remain in contact with me. Then I look at various coaches, and even at the moment, you're looking at, like, Porrick Joyce there, our manager. Like, I've looked up to him since I was baby infant. So he's been someone that's a big influence on me. And Keane O'Neill there, our trainer as well, is someone that has kind of really stood to me and challenged me. You know, like, sometimes you can go through and different setups mightn't challenge you as much. It might challenge the group but not challenge you individually.
And is that the key sort of factor for these people who inspire you, that they all challenge you?
Yeah, I think that's the because it stimulates me to be challenged, because essentially they're seeing, like, in a way, you can look at it two ways. I always say, you can either say, oh, like, why are you making it so hard on me? But then at the same time, like, saying, all right, let's go about, let's find a way here. Like, and that's kind of the way I've seen it, like, that I'm just trying to find a way to get this, get whatever the challenge is, do it, like, complete it, and then kind of say, well, like, it's nothing more so you're not doing it to say, look, I can do that. It's more so, it's, again, your self-confidence, that self-belief saying, I knew I could do it.
There's a bit of mental agility in there as well, isn't it? It's not all just about the body. It's kind of wrapping your head around a new way of approaching something.
Yeah, I think that's partly to do with, again, my personality would helps in that regard, because I'd be an optimistic guy. I'm very positive in relation to my outlook on it. So, like, I'll always say there's a way to do it, whether or not I don't might know the way, but I'll just you know, that's the way my kind of personality kind of comes around it. And you know, through that then it kind of leads to, you know, the knock-ons that you're actually able to knock this down. And it's just one chip at a time. And as I said, if you persist in it, eventually you'll knock that down. And that's kind of where I go.
I'm going to ask you a little bit of a curveball, excuse the pun now, just in terms of, you know, I think there's a massive opportunity to look at the impacts of sport and mental health combined, you know, and I can see you sort of in your teaching role and seeing the impact that you're making on individual kids. Is there a bigger sort of vision for what you could do?
I definitely feel so. Like, I don't think it stops at teaching. Like, I think, like, and that's probably why, just sometimes you can be scared of tomorrow and not knowing what it is. But in another way, I kind of look at it as being excited about it, because, you know, there's bigger things, you know, there's big things out there that you can go. And like, even, you know, as I said, like, just from that whole point of view, like you said, with the, that mental side of things, like that, you know, those conversations that you can have, the more that you can have, and if that can have an influence on someone's life, like, they're the kind of things you want to do. So like, why would you cap it at, why would you put your ceiling in one area when that ceiling could be broadened? Like, and that's kind of where I suppose I've came to the realization in life that There isn't a ceiling out there. Like, you put the ceiling there yourself, and if you want to leave the ceiling there and keep looking at it, you'll do that. But if you keep just trying to find a way through, you know, who knows where it's going to lead? And that's, for me, probably the most exciting thing about life at the moment, is that who knows what tomorrow is going to bring, and just be excited for it, live it, and look forward to it.
Well, I don't think there's a better way to end this interview than a vision for your future which has no ceiling. Thank you very much, Shane, for your time and for being part of Driving Progress with Audi.